It's time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is June 15th, 2020. We're excited to have you joining another podcast. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And our commitment is to bring you timely information in audio format. And the best reward we can get is you sharing this virally within your community. And man, it is crazy how much that is going on. For some reason, Google is just pushing us out like crazy right now. So grateful to however you got a hold of us, but we're grateful to have you here today on the Hot Topics segment. So the first thing we do is we'll be talking the regular market update, what's going on in the markets, the shorter segments, and then a Hot Topics segment. We're going to be talking with Matt Graham. He's the founder and CEO of MBS Live. He is the new regular that has joined us and will be here each and every week giving us market update and commentary. So grateful for Joe Farr being here for as long as he was and doing what he did, but he is fully retired out. Now we've got Matt in here, and I'm very excited for you, our listeners, to get to know Matt Graham a little bit more and a little bit better. So I've gotten to know him, and I tell you, I'm really excited about him and what he does with his product, MBS Live. So we're going to get a lot of his perspective on what's going on in the market. So stay tuned to the Hot Topic segment. Also, we're so proud to be a part of Industry Syndicate. Check out all of the podcasts at industrysyndicate.com. Also, we're a part of mortgagemedia.com. Check out that. Specifically, check out Dave Matthews and my podcast we do. It's called The Two Daves. And we've been talking about all the rioting going on, and we talked about it, the impact on housing. Just shared a little bit of what's happening over there. Check out Mortgage Media. You'll learn a little bit more about what we're about. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Be sure to sign up for the app, which is the Mortgage Action Alliance. You can download it on your favorite smartphone. Get it and get your voice heard in Washington, D.C. Also, Finastra. Somehow they've picked up 14,000 customers, if I ever have that number right. They're doing something right. They're one of the third largest fintech company in the world, and they have got some innovation going on that we can't wait to talk about down the road, as we're going to have them on, and Dan Putney will be coming on talking about some of the things that they're doing that's very innovative. Say, well, you're just bringing them on because they're an advertiser. Well, we have innovative advertisers, so that's why we're having them on, and they do have some really cool things that they're working on, and we'll be happy to share that with you when we have Dan Putney on. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. These two co-ops actually complement each other very nicely. We're members of both of them. It allows you to develop a relationship with lenders and vendors. So if you're a lender, want to get to know some vendors, and then also lenders talking to other lenders of like size and what's going on there, that's going on in both of these collaboratives, and I encourage you to check them out. Also, the Community Mortgage Lenders of America, as well as Indicom. They have been exploding up on the scene. Everyone's so busy. We're all looking for underwriters. Outsourcing is a big tool. So Indicom Solutions, check them out, as well as Incelerate. We had Josh. He's a good friend of mine, also perfect name. But Incelerate allows you to engage with your borrowers in a more effective way. Be sure to go to our website. Take a look at the information and the offer that Josh has for you, our listeners, on our website, on our Licking on Lending website. Not the Blog Talk Radio website, at the Licking on Lending podcast website. As well as Ainsworth Advisors. More and more companies are finding out they really do need an advisory board. Fannie and Freddie are talking more about it. They're asking, who's your advisory board? Hope you'll check out ainsworthadvisors.com. That board is growing, and we're excited to be a part of, have them as sponsor. Also, it's one of my companies, so I'm pretty bullish on it. Anyway, AI Assist, it's artificial intelligence, how to reach borrowers and connect with borrowers. But I'm also working on getting another podcast up that's related to artificial intelligence. It's one that Alan, our tech guy, Alan Pollock, turned me on to. It used to be Face Me as the name of the company, but it's now Unique Me or something like that. Anyway, very cool technology, and we're talking with them. It's a New Zealand company. We'll have them on as a guest. It is crazy what's coming down the line in innovation. Also, Celebrity Home Loans, growing their company through acquisition. Pleased to have them, as well as Knowledge Coop. And then Mobility RE. Just had a conversation with Ben Terlink this last week. Man, they just launched a new segment of what they do, having to look at realtors. If you're interested, Check that out, as well as Modex. We had both the Dales, Dale the Third and Dale Jr. on. It was 3 weeks ago, so be sure to check out that interview. It went real well, as well as I want to say thank you to Velma, Vendorsurf, Vidyard. And also, finally, a special thank you goes to Alice, Andy, Alan, and now Matt. We're going to have Matt in the Hot Topic segment. So let's get over to Rob Van Rapphorst.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac released a bulletin and lender letter to provide servicer incentive fees for COVID-19 payment deferrals, as well as update servicer incentive fees for other workout options. Incentive fees for repayment plans and payment deferrals will be $500, while incentive fees for flex modifications will be $1,000. Also, yesterday, MBA released its latest results from the forbearance and call volume survey. The survey revealed that the total number of loans now in forbearance increased from 8.53% to 8.55% as of June 7th. According to MBA's estimate, almost 4.3 million homeowners are now in forbearance plans. And finally, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell is scheduled to give an update on the current state of the economy in back-to-back hearings with both chambers of Congress this week. MBA will be monitoring Powell's testimony and will provide relevant updates as they become available. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Let's get over to Les Parker with this week's macro view of the markets. Les, what do you have for a sound parody for us this week?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Power Seller, making hedging easy.
Everybody dance. Low, low, low. Buy a house with low rates. It seems urban dwellers want to leave their studio apartments behind and discover open spaces away from crowds and room enough to work at home. Others want to avoid the commute to an elevator that holds 20 but's limited to 2. Why not? Rates are low. MBS yields appear spellbound by the Fed's control. It wants to keep short-term and long-term rates low to 2022. Mortgage applications to purchase a home are at multi-year highs. So why shouldn't everyone dance? Low, low, low. Buy a house with low rates. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Yeah, I can almost feel the disco ball in the ceiling when they hear that old song. Anyway, good job, Les Parker. Yeah, low, low, low. And looks like we're going to have low rates for a long time. So what are you doing with all those refinances out there? And are we going to have market volatility? Yes, we are. And the rates will be moving around. And you've got to have a really good system to manage interest rate volatility just to see what's going on. And we've got Matt Graham. Yes, he's going to be the hot topic, but he's also one of our regulars. So we're going to get an update from Matt Graham with what's going on in the market, and I'm looking at the MBS live screens. Matt, good to have you here with us, friend. Appreciate you. What are you seeing on your screens? I love the way your screens are organized. You could pay this big money to get these really expensive systems, or it's all right there.
If you're not an MBS trader and just an originator, it's everything you need that looks snazzy enough to impress your clients. I'll get into talking about markets real quick, and then we'll loop back to that in the hot topic, I suppose. Pretty epic week last week for those, well, unless you were looking for stocks to move significantly higher. But for bonds, it was a nice recovery because recall the previous week, yields and rates had risen pretty sharply in response to ADP employment, NFP non-farm payrolls, strong economic data, and a bunch of optimism over where the markets were heading with the economy reopening. Then last week comes along and it was quite a bit of reversal. Part of it was a technical reversal, meaning bonds were trading for reasons that just had to do with bond trading levels and not in response to fundamental data. But stocks joined in that party, you could call it, about midweek after the Fed announcement, not necessarily because of it. But once stocks began moving lower, investors were thinking, hey, maybe stocks were a bit euphoric. And as investors pull money out of stocks, maybe putting a little bit more into the bond market, helping the bond market recover, helping rates move lower. And the Fed announcement itself helped bonds quite a bit because, as we talked about last week, we were looking for the Fed to confirm its bond buying intentions. Up until now, it had been buying MBS and treasuries on an emergency basis, and we just wanted a little bit more certainty from the Fed. They gave it to us. It was a nice little vote of confidence for the mortgage market because, in the past and in general, the Fed has said it would like to get back to a primarily treasury securities portfolio. So you never really know exactly how much support they're feeling like giving the mortgage market outside of crisis situations. But last week they said, we're going to keep buying at least as much as we've been buying. That is indefinite for now. So if they're saying that they're going to keep policy rates low through 2022, it's not necessarily a bond buying commitment through 2022, but it is for the time being. And it locks that amount into place. The bonds really enjoyed that last week. MBS moved to long-term highs and mortgage rates, of course, 2 days spent at new all-time lows with the average lender under 3% for their top tier rates and a little bit of bounce at the end of the week. But really, that was just a byproduct of the strong move on the first 3 days. So starting the new week roughly in the same territory and not on the agenda other than just to watch coronavirus headlines, which seem to have come back to center stage as the big market mover.
Based on what you're seeing out there on the economic calendar, is it going to be more news that we should be looking to move the markets, or is there something that just stands out right now from an economic standpoint?
So, sure. I think that if an economic report speaks loudly enough, it will be heard. And that's something I say from time to time. So we weren't looking for the ADP employment report to have a big impact at the beginning of the month, but it did because it was so far from expectation. If that happens again, like with retail sales this week, same thing could happen. But in general, it seems like the focus has shifted back toward keeping pace with coronavirus headlines and case count and seeing if the economic reopening is going to cause a surge in cases, then the market response needs to be reconsidered.
Well, I am looking forward to having you on the hot topic here just a little bit later in the program. So stay tuned. Stay right there, Matt. Looking forward to letting our audience get to know you as I've gotten to start to get to know you. Very excited about the relationship. And I'm looking forward to just getting to know you better and letting our audience get to know you better in the hot topic section. So stay right there. We'll be back with you in just a little bit. Let's run over to Alice Alvey, live right now with us. Alice is CMB, President of Education and Training. Amazing Union Home Mortgage. She's got this week's legislative update. What you got, Alice? Good to have you here.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Yes, Union Home Mortgage is amazing because we are still closing loans. And I think our turn time is still like 27, 28 days. We're amazing.
Wow. You are amazing.
Oh, I know. We heard about that some companies that still like trying to close homes from April. I feel so sorry for those loan officers. Anyway, so here's my tidbit for the day, right? I think one of the things that's starting to come up as we think about the impact of returning to work and really the overall natural disaster for our COVID-19 is really the impact to homeowners and renters and their credit. So I've been watching a little bit on what are we going to do as an industry with credit scores now? Because we know that under the CARES Act is requiring lenders to report individuals as current, even though they may have chosen not to make their house payment or their rent payment, right? So the challenge that we're dealing with now as I'm watching what's unfolding is the CFPB issued their guidance then. So we have Congress who issues the act and says, here's what's supposed to happen. You're supposed to report people as current. Then the CFPB has to weigh in to say, all right, how does this impact the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which regulates how lenders are supposed to report, right? So we have Congress passing a law, and now we need the regulator who oversees that to say, all right, how are you going to interpret this? And the CFPB, basically, when they came out with this guidance on April 1st, we all kind of went, all right, well, they're going to lighten up. Right. And usually when you read about a regulator saying we're going to lighten up, you go, oh, OK, I'll read that later. Right. Cool. They're going to lighten up. I can go pay attention to something else. And within that lightening up was essentially, I think, where there's some concern is how do we handle disputes? Right. So disputes are something the credit bureaus themselves and the Credit Bureau Association is looking at saying, well, if I can't get a hold of a county and I now have to stay in compliance with this 30-day rule with managing disputes and walking through this process, which many consumers are aware of and many loan officers work with to help consumers get better credit scores, how is all that going to work? So the CARES Act did extend it to be 45 days for the credit reporting agencies to have a little bit more room in working with counties that are partially staffed or even closed in some cases. But then the CFPB is still saying, we're not going to totally enforce everything. If you can use a good faith effort, we're still going to enforce, but we're going to look more in good faith and understanding the circumstances. Well, apparently, 21 of the state's attorney generals have a problem with that. and intermittent across the country. The problem with lightening up on regulations, well, they saw it as a slippery slope. It was a mix of mostly Democratic states, a couple Republican states thrown in there, but really more about who has some big systemic problems with COVID. And so they're feeling the pinch a little bit more. And they saw this as it's not the time to let the CRA fall asleep at the switch, and that the attorneys general are saying, we're going to be vigilant. We want to make sure disputes, all the reporting is being handled correctly, and we will be enforcing this to the letter of the law versus the CFPB coming in and saying, well, from a lender standpoint, we may not be. So it's an interesting dynamic going on. I think we're going to end up with some muddy credit report. We're going to be watching for to see how good is a credit score now in using the tools that lenders and furnishers send to credit bureaus. What are credit scores going to look like as the reporting kind of unfolds, and how each lender will be handling them a little bit differently? What the furnishers report, there is software that's used to try and standardize that reporting, but I think we're in for some changes in the way credit scores look based on credit reporting behavior and how furnishers are going to report.
Thank you so much, Alice. Good report. I think that there's been a shift. Everyone's been worrying about CFPB up until more recently. And now it's the states. And I tell you, I was just talking to a client who went through a HUD audit and a state audit. And I had several clients going through it, actually. And the state audit was really interesting. The conclusions are being drawn differently from the state, the auditor, based on the state that they're from. So I think we're going to be seeing a little bit dicier situation. Instead of having one regulator, we've got 50 or as many states as you're registered in. And I think it's going to be real interesting what impact that might have on some companies deciding to stay in a state or not after some of these upcoming audits. So regulation, we all agree. I did that interview with Joe Murin last week. I couldn't believe we both joined it. We need regulation, and we couldn't believe we were saying that, but it's coming out of one place. Let it come out of Washington, D.C., and let it be more common sense. But never thought I'd ever say that, Alice. But states,
right.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. Thank you.
Yeah, the states are going to be a real challenge then in this area, as lenders are trying to be lenient, but then now the state attorney generals are saying, follow the letter of the law. And what's conflicting to me is usually leniency works in favor of the consumer. And in this case, they're viewing it as not being in favor of the consumer. And I think the area that they're concerned with is managing disputes, that they do want those cleared up, and that there is some discretion for credit bureaus. So maybe in the future we get a credit bureau at one of the major groups on the call who can help us understand this a little bit better on what they're seeing as this unfolds more.
You'll love this. I was talking to Mitch Kiter, who's one of the advisors on the Ainsworth Advisory Board that I have, and I'm so pleased with his participation. He says, Dave, we're so busy. He's talking about how he's down in Florida just staying in his place there, and he's just been locked down there with COVID. I said, you just like kind of getting close to retirement? He goes, oh, no, it's 6 days a week, and it's 12, 14 hours. He says, we've never been busier, and I'm wondering if this is part of it's what's contributing to it. It's all the state issues that are starting to arise. We're hearing about it. Good report, Alice. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on. I am looking forward to having you participate as long as you can in the Hot Topic segment. We got a new regular, Alice. So good. So exciting.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. You bet. Alan Pollock's good here with us. Before we get into Alan's segment, I just want to give a shout out to Finastra. Yes, they're one of our sponsors, but it's some of the innovative things that they're doing there. They have their FusionBot system, but they also have an amazing front-end system that really allows you to connect. Incelerate does a great job with that. That's another product that's out there that's one of our sponsors. Got to check out what Finastra has with what they're doing in FusionBot. It's a total embodied system. I mean, it's all in one. And I encourage you to go out to our website, check out our videos that we put up there on the Finastra. And then also, we'll be talking to you about some upcoming innovation in the way of conferences and communication. Alice earlier was talking about how Union Home is really doing some innovative things, bringing their company together and doing something over video. Alice, we're going to have to make that just a whole hot topic in and of itself to hear about some of the innovative things you guys are doing. But let's get over to Alan Pollock. Alan, good to have you here, friend, as always. What do you have for us this week, friend?
Great to be here. I've got some things to make you think. But before I do so, Alice, you brought up an interesting topic. I was reading an article today, funny you brought it up actually, about the pandemic code or natural disaster code that the different people can put into your credit report so that they're still reporting, because by law, they still have to report your creditworthiness and what has occurred. But the code is read by Vantage, but it's not read by FICO. And so it'll only help in a case where somebody is doing a subjectional review by eyeball and looking at what was in the notes. And I think there are some folks trying to talk to FICO and say that, hey, these codes should indicate that the score for that month should be ignored. I don't know what's going on there, but very interesting, of course.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Vantage just picked up on it, though, that they're doing. I tell you, I'm so crazy more excited about what Vantage is doing because it opens up so many more potential home buyers that are qualified. That's a whole other topic. Go back and listen to that podcast we did well back. We interviewed, and his name escapes me right now. They had a great interview on that. But anyway, what you got on the tech side?
Oh, man, all kinds of stuff. And real quick, talking about AI, one is our friends at Unique. That's going to be an extremely exciting podcast because all the Unique stuff that they're doing right now and what I've done with them. So that'll be fun. So definitely want to keep on the lookout for when that comes up. And speaking of AI, remember Flappy? I brought him up a couple weeks ago. He was the hamburger robot
that.
Chef.
Well, now got some feedback on that. That was hilarious.
Well, now we have Sally. And Sally is made by a company called Chowbotics. And she makes salad. And especially since the national pandemic, or the international pandemic, we should say, Sally actually holds 22 airtight ingredients right inside of herself. So within her robot self. And she makes yogurt, grains, and salad bowls every day, 24 hours per day. They had like a 70-80% spike in the request of these robots to be deployed across hospitals and other places, and they will continue to grow. They just raised more capital. So the company's called Chowbotics, and I think we'll see more of this, especially in things like a salad that I guess it's kind of subjectional, right? You can have a machine make it or you can make it. You need that love and tender touch, but Sally's out there. So two funny things to think about. The first one is there should be a reality show where flat earthers have to find the edge of the world. And the second one is they put music from the 50s and 60s in medicine commercials to appear to the older generation, meaning sometime in the future will Despacito be playing on commercials for laxatives.
That's bad. Okay.
Great items to ponder on. So back to the news. We've got all kinds of good stuff going on. First, we've got Cloud Verga has launched a brand new TPO platform.
Yeah, I heard that.
Part of the Arrive platform.
Yeah,
so you want to check that out. DocMagic is providing their e-sign technology at no cost. Zero. So I didn't read the defined details. You may have to already be a customer, of course, but you can acquire or leverage their e-sign technology for free. And I did not bring this up. Thank you to a friend of mine. His name is Vince for reminding me today about this. But Mizmo, starting July 1st, is going to be charging 75 cents on loans registered with MERS. That money is going to be a pass-through, not kept at all by MERS. It's for MBA and Mizmo to advance and accelerate production of Mizmo and the innovation and the continuance of it. And I gave it a good topic. Remember our friend, Michael Frattantoni. He is the president of Mizmo. And we can chat with him about that. But July 1st, Mizmo will be charging 75 cents. Also, Compass Analytics, as we know, they're a black and white organization now. They just launched an exciting capital markets focused functionality called Compass Point. And it really focuses on pay ups and mark to market. So you want to check that out. Really interesting. David, this is another really cool one. They get into modifications, right? And Solomon Edwards and Constant have announced a new cooperative agreement to offer TotalMod, which is a platform to help servicers avoid large staffing companies and reduce phone channel volume, basically to make the process more efficient for loan modifications. So you want to check that out. And OpenClose, my own company, has partnered with CyberLink Software for automated MERS process, not only the ramp, the registration to MERS, but the recording of it back in the LOS. So if you're an OpenClose user, you want to look at that. David, this is a really important topic. If you remember last week, we talked about tickets, and the fact that you've got all these things you've asked your vendors for, and you need to massage and manage that. Well, we still have to talk about adoption rates. And because of Sally and some of the other news, I don't want to cut short on that. But adoption rates are really, really important. And it gets into how much empathy is in our products and how do we use technology and the human, the contribution of our human self versus technology to have that empathy and be able to help. We'll talk about technology adoption next week, and I promise we will. But this is really, really important. A lot of our listeners are Mortgage Coach users. And Dave Savage, who is CEO of Mortgage Coach and has a huge following on Facebook, there are thousands of people that talk about how they leverage this technology, just how they navigate the waters of the industry every day. One of their LOs talked about how technology isn't the end all and it's not going to replace us. And he gave a perfect example. He unfortunately had somebody pass at the closing table. And he is using empathy and just being himself a human to work with them and to help them not only through this crisis for the most he can do, but to still help that loan go through, to still help them and reconfigure and work it out. And he was basically talking in his post about it. Technology doesn't handle everything. And so if you follow that group, you can just search for it. But just so I'd mention that point, technology is not the end all, although it is extremely important for us to continue to evolve and innovate and do business.
Yeah, it's doing a lot in the way of adding empathy, too, especially when you look at what's going on with some of this artificial intelligence communication, as well as now with digital human. Very exciting stuff, or scary stuff. Got a lot of implications on it.
Yes.
Thanks for introducing me to those guys that face me now unique. So very excited. We had several demos. We're having several conversations. I'm talking to the president. And it's interesting. They moved from New Zealand. Guess where they moved to? You know what tech center they moved
now.
To? Yeah, they're here in Austin, Texas. How about that?
That's right.
Come to Austin. Great place. Anyway, and we actually put 20 people in elevators that hold 20 here. We're back, pretty much back. Things are pretty much normal.
That's great.
So, anyway, Fred, appreciate it.
Fantastic.
Good to have you, and then have you participate in the Hot Topic segment. And Alan, I'd love to have you check out what Matt's got for technology. It is really cool the way it's put together, and there's some favorite features. So stay involved in the Hot Topic segment if you have time. Appreciate you being here.
Looking forward to it. Thanks.
You bet. Let's get over to Dr. Andy Schell, the Prophet Doctor.
It's like what Alice was talking about, because if you don't make your mortgage payment, you actually really didn't make your mortgage payment, but you didn't not make your mortgage payment.
That's funny. You really didn't, but you did, but you didn't do it. Anyway, that's a tongue twister. That'll spin you out.
It's the end of a quarter. So every end of a quarter is significant for financial reporting. And it's so significant that quarterly reporting can cause you to either preserve your agency approvals, or you can sometimes lose agency approval because of your quarter end financial reporting. So I was going to talk about that a little bit. We've got 2 weeks to the end of the quarter. So on each quarter, we submit financial reports to the warehouse line lenders, to the agencies, and even to state licensing departments, but we don't have to submit it directly. It's done for us. So the warehouse banks receive the financial statements, and they expect to receive GAAP-based financial statements that would include the balance sheet, the income statement, the changes in financial position, or changes in capital. Now, the warehouse line banks also expect to get a debt covenant certificate, typically signed by the CFO and the CEO, that represents that the interim financial data is accurate and complete. So lenders get information, the agencies get information, the agencies have a specialized form called the MBFRF, the Mortgage Banker Financial Report Form, and it's a standardized format that everybody uses to submit data into the agencies. Now the state licensing department get data through the NMLS. So the NMLS actually has two forms, one for agency-approved lenders and non-agency-approved lenders. In both cases, all the production volume from each originator is submitted every quarter. So every quarter, the NMLS receives this data that says the name, NMLS number, and how many loans and what the loan amounts were for every single originator, for every single mortgage company throughout the entire country. Now, this data flows through to the specific state, but it's also accessed by other government agencies like Department of Labor, Department of Justice, and they do analysis of this data as well. So it's really important that it's precise, clean, clear, accurate. But about this quarter end, protect your company, preserve your agency approval, there's really three tests that all these people will apply to your quarter end financials. And the three key tests, the most important things to monitor, are cash position, change in capital or equity, whatever you want to call it, and profitability. Those three things, cash, change in equity, and profitability. Now, the cash position is really important because that drives the liquidity test. Now, cash position can be enhanced. You can actually do something today about your cash position at the end of the month. The thing that I've done all the years that I was CFO of a company is we would begin increasing our funding request to be the maximum amount for all the loans that we close for the rest of the month. It means the warehouse line balance is going to be higher. We're going to have more interest expense, but we're not going to use our cash to fund loans as much. We're going to have more cash that we hold, and holding cash is better than having reduced warehouse borrowing, generally speaking. So that's one trick. We want to make certain we're focused on that liquidity test. Now, the second thing that's really important is the change in capital position. So that normally people think about, well, what makes my capital go up and down? Well, profits. If I make more profit, I make it go up. If I have a loss, they go down. A lot of times mortgage companies, at least right now, are seeming to do very well. But distributions to owners also causes capital to go down. So you got to be careful about owner distributions. You can't just take all the money out. That change in capital from the last quarter for the current quarter is monitored by everybody. And if it changes, particularly if it goes down by 10% or more, there can be some serious consequence from that. Now, all these things, the cash position test, the change in equity test, the profitability test, these are all normal things that all mortgage CFOs know about. So the important point is to be sure and listen to what your CFO is telling you to do today and get ready and prepared for that June 30th quarter end financial statement production that's going to be coming up. If you have any other questions, be sure and reach out. This is the Profit Doctor segment. I'm Dr. Andy Schell, and that is the Profit Doctor.
Good job. Well, yeah, I was writing notes feverishly here as you were talking about. I'm doing my CMB. You're sponsoring me on my CMB. And so I'm preparing for that, and we got into some of the things that could mess things up, and we just had a story problem. In fact, I can't wait to talk to you about it. I got a few questions on my story problem this week. Yeah, it talks about really a capital position and owners wanting to take money out. And at a particular time of the year and based on circumstances that were just not good.
Well, no, owners want their money, but taking the money can cause the company to lose its agency approval. And if you lose agency approvals, you lose servicing rights and you lose your origination team. It's a cascade of death. So just don't do it. Just be careful. Understand the impacts.
Get advice. Yeah, that doesn't mean you can't pull cash out occasionally, but do it with someone that has an understanding of what this can do for you. Great segment, Andy. Good stuff. Appreciate it. A lot of information there. It is alphabet soup up there.
Mortgage Banker Financial Report Form. Financial Report Form, MBFRF.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go, folks. Go back and listen to this segment anytime or any of the things that Andy is putting on this podcast on our website. We have them all listed out. We actually had someone calling me. They were studying. And they said, Lickin, I love your podcast because MBA doesn't list it on there for references, but I got some great information from Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, going in there. So there's some people that are getting information for their test and preparing. So I got to go back and listen to my own podcast, your segments. And there's some good stuff. All right, Andy. Looking forward to having barbecue here with you soon. Yeah, listeners, he's
absolutely
local to me, so we get to do that. We're local. We get to do our barbecue. Anyway, good to have you with us, everybody. That is ending and wrapping up the first part of the podcast. For those of you who are listening live, just stay right on. We're going to get right into the hot topic. But for those of you who are listening on a downloaded basis, this wraps up this week's market update about everything going on in the industry. Just stay tuned, and the next podcast up will be the hot topic segment. We do break them into two segments so that they're more digestible when you're listening on a downloaded basis. So let's get into this week's hot topic. We've got Matt Graham, founder of and CEO of MBS Live. And we're going to be getting a closer look into what MBS Live does and how it can be used to stay on top of the markets and the MBS markets and the treasury markets and all that's going on with this. But more importantly, we just want to get to know Matt. So, Matt, good to have you here, friend. Appreciate you and agreeing to sign up to be part of our podcast each and every week. Good to have you back.
Hey, you bet. Yeah, if you're going to talk about barbecue in Austin, then I definitely need to show up. I have not made it out to Franklin Barbecue yet. And so I need to know if lines are back to normal or if I missed
They're manageable. I actually said someone ago, I walked in right away, got right into Franklin's, and that is a long wait. It is one of them, but we've got another one. It's even a best kept secret. We won't tell anybody, just our audience.
Okay.
And that is Opie's. It is right in Spicewood. It is as good as Franklin's. I got to tell you, it is amazing. And that's where Andy and I get
down
to
there.
Yeah, come on out. You'll join Andy and I.
Yeah, you bet.
Get yourself out here. We'd love to have you join us. It's awesome barbecue. That's Texas known for it, and we got it. But I'm really interested in getting to know yourself. How long have you been affiliated with the mortgage industry, and what's your path to MBS Live?
Sure thing. So I started out as an originator back in 2002, 2003, and had a pretty good time with that and really fell in love with this sort of meta aspect of following along financial markets for the purpose of understanding what rates were doing and getting on top of intraday reprices. And there were several great services to do that at the time. And I felt that I wanted to dig a little bit deeper and see how far that rabbit hole really went. And just sort of boldly and naively and brazenly started writing market commentary. I think maybe a little bit overconfident at the time, but people really seemed to enjoy it and get a lot out of it. And one thing led to another, and found myself creating a little bit of a following along with Adam Quinones and Mortgage News Daily. Created a bit of following for people that really wanted to follow along that deeper aspect of the secondary mortgage market. And one of the things that we were doing was, you know, conveying this information that we were seeing on our terminal, like TradeWeb and such, and people wanted that sense of something that was truly live in real time and interactive. And that was really how MBS Live was started, is I wanted to give people something that was live and interactive that kind of looked and felt like a trading terminal with the numbers flashing in green and red on the screen. And from that concept, everything else has sort of evolved. And we have the live chat and live alert.
Well, this screen is loaded with information. There's a mobile version of it. There's a lot of information here. And I want to kind of break down and get to know it a little bit better. But you launched this company, MBS Live. When did you launch it? What's the journey to what we see as a look and feel now? I'd love to hear about that from a technology standpoint.
Yeah, the technology standpoint, I wish I could talk more about the technical details because my business partners are kind of the wizards behind that. And just about them, I will say I have no idea how they do what they do. All I know is that at one point in this journey, I was paying several thousand dollars a month for this very highly recommended Wall Street tech firm to build out my vision. And it was nothing but bugs and challenges and whatnot. But despite that, my now business partner said, hey, we could do better. Because at that point, we weren't working together as closely. And they saw that there was really good potential with what I was trying to do, but poor execution on the tech side. And so they jumped in and made it such that it doesn't have to be downloaded. It doesn't have to run complicated web scripts on your computer. And it can flash in real time like a downloaded trading terminal would, which is pretty uncommon for most websites like this. It's not going to flash like a trading terminal. So we've been doing that since 2010 in that form. And then before that, we were scraping by and with the previous version since 2008. So however long that is, 12 years, give or take.
Here we are. Yeah, look at what you got here today. It's just amazing. This does look like a TradeWeb or any of the other where you pay thousands and thousands of dollars, but it's got all the information that we'd ever need right here. So it's very, very good. Excellent. Love
it. If you're an originator, yeah. We partner with Thomson Reuters, and I'd like to keep a healthy separation of functionality there. So if you are heavy in the secondary markets, you definitely need a full trading terminal. I would like to throw that shout out to Refinitiv Icon and Thomson Reuters because we couldn't do what we do without them. And if you're a big dog, you need to be rolling with the big dogs over there. But if you're an originator or just have an interest in market movement, MBS Live is great.
Yeah, I think for the average mortgage banker out there that's not doing a ton of positions in the market, take a lot of positions in the market, this is more than adequate. This is really good. And then, and now, where are you located? A lot of people say, okay, got to know what part of the country you're in.
Yeah, I'm in Portland, Oregon, and our corporate offices are in Charlotte.
Corporate office in Charlotte. How in the heck do you do bi-coastal? How's that working? How'd that happen?
Well, the internet is wonderful. We are online chatting all day long, and they do the tech side, and I do the content creation side, and that's pretty much that. It's a well-oiled machine the way my team has it set up.
Well, it is put together extremely well, and I encourage people to get out there and take a look at it. Let's talk a little bit about like the coronavirus and the effect on the mortgage market. How has the narrative evolved? Let's talk a little bit about that.
I'm going to get right to that. But while we're moving on from MBS Live, I just wanted to say the last couple of weeks, I said I was going to make you a code for the Lickin' on Lending listeners. And that code is live now. So if you use the code LOL, Lickin' on Lending, then go to mbslive.net, sign up for a free trial. Entering that code will double the free trial time and also obviate the need to input any credit card info. So it makes it really fast and easy to try out the site. And
well, thank you.
Yeah, you bet. We'll maybe do some sort of special offer, make it even sweeter in the future.
Yeah, check it out for free. And then double the time on it. Don't have to put in a credit card. That's excellent. I am going to come back and talk about some screens on here, but I really want to get the thought leadership going because you do have a lot of great thought leadership. And that's one of the things that's great. That's what we're going to start hearing more from as you get in and provide your report each and every week. And so let's get over to that big question, the coronavirus and how has the narrative evolved? That's really interesting.
It is maybe one of the most interesting things that we've ever gone through. The financial crisis was different because it was ugly in a mortgage specific sort of way. And there was a lot of emotion tied up with it that was, again, specific to the mortgage industry. When the coronavirus thing started happening, some people were saying it's not as bad as the financial crisis yet, but very quickly in several ways, and it's now obvious based on the economic data, it was completely unprecedented, and it was much worse than the financial crisis in some ways. And I don't think the mortgage industry really realized what was going to happen at first. So I'll just kind of walk through a little bit of a timeline of my thought process through the coronavirus market impact, and just jump in and tell me to shut up and ask your question if I get going too deep on something. So really March was when things got really crazy. And in early March, the writing was on the wall with respect to shutdowns, quarantines, and the effect that was going to have on people's incomes potentially and ability to make mortgage payments, and just the overall de-risking of the market, the flight to cash, the mad dash for cash. People were panicked. They wanted to get out of their trading positions. They wanted to deleverage. And this was something that we weren't going to fully be able to appreciate without the benefit of hindsight. But really, early March was all about sell, 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 sell. Whatever you got, sell it. Got to get the cash, got to get neutral. It was a mad dash. And that, when you do it in the mortgage bond market and the treasury market, as listeners may know, makes rates go quickly higher. It makes bond prices go quickly lower. We have a vast oversupply of selling demand and not many buyers. Nobody really wants to open new positions right then. Even though opening new positions was probably a good idea from an investment standpoint, because if you are kind of pessimistic on what's going to happen to the economy, buying bonds could be a good idea because bond prices are probably going to go up. Nonetheless, the demand wasn't there. And so things tanked in early March everywhere. And that is when the Fed stepped in on a Sunday, March 15th, and with an emergency announcement. At the time, I didn't really feel like they necessarily needed to jump in, but MBS spreads that prior week, so calls for the Fed to jump in, I should say, had been mounting as coronavirus kind of came into focus. And spreads, and when I say spreads, I'm talking about the spread between mortgage bonds and treasury yields. And it's just sort of a quick way to reference how healthy the demand is for mortgage bonds. Those spreads had blown up that week heading into that emergency Fed announcement. So here comes the Fed, and they're going to buy MBS and treasuries again. And theoretically, that's supposed to soothe bond market back on track, right? Because that's what has always happened when the Fed has come out guns blazing. And this was probably the craziest couple of days we have ever seen.
So insane.
In the MBS market. To put that in context, we always look back on 2008, 2009 as being something we'll never see again in terms of this insane volatility, these 2-point moves in MBS prices, 10, 20, 30 bip days in 10-year yield. And now March, it was like something we'd never seen before. And one of the days in particular, I forget exactly which one, was back and forth in such a colossal way that it just made the craziest volatility we've ever seen intraday. And that's where a lot of these call concerns came up. But we'll get to that in a second. Anyway, a couple days after the Fed's emergency announcement, paradoxically, we see yields moving higher, drastically so, and MBS prices moving significantly lower, paradoxically so. To understand why that's happening, all we have to consider is, hey, the Fed said they were going to buy a certain amount, and the market's telling the Fed, yo, guys, that's not enough. We are more panicked than you thought. We have more to sell than you thought. The REITs have a ton of leveraged MBS they need to get rid of quickly, and there's not enough demand from what you guys, the Fed, said and what the rest of the market's going to buy to get us back to a cash position. So then the Fed said, oh, yeah, you think that we're not up to the task. So then, I mean, they pulled out like four bazookas strapped
together.
Nuclear
warfare, yeah, it was.
Man.
It felt like
I tell you,
nuclear.
So at one point, they said up to $50 billion a day. They only ended up buying $36.6 billion a day on average that week. But even that is staggering.
Yes.
So the Fed basically said, hey, we got this. And at that point, bond market said, oh, very sorry that we stepped out of line. We will go back to our corner and just be calm and peaceful. And everything has really calmed down since then. But the negative byproduct, of course, was that prices rose so quickly in MBS that a lot of lenders were put out by this margin call issue, which was maligned as a big, bad issue that was going to put lenders out of business. I think it would have been way worse if it had kept going. And I think the fear was going to keep heading in that direction. But what we were telling people on MBS Live at the time is that this only lasts so long. The Fed will level off. The Fed's not going to keep buying just to juice bond prices. They're just buying for liquidity. They're buying to stabilize the buying versus selling relationship. They're not buying to inflate MBS prices or to push rates lower in this case. They may have done that in the past, but not this time.
So, I got to get Andy Schell in here because this really had such a big impact. Andy, I know you have clients. I had clients. They said if this had continued another day or two, they were facing insolvency. We came that close to some major, major institutions going under. And that is just a nail-biting time. Andy Schell, welcome in and this discussion. I'm glad you get a chance to meet Matt. So glad.
Hey, Matt. It's great to have you, Matt, on the show. So I'm actually very much enjoying listening to you describe and recant the experience that we all endured through March this year. And I actually have more questions than I think I have time to ask at this time. So I'm going to circle back to what was the real problem as a result of the margin call angst. I want to get to that. But let me just throw out and bookmark a couple of other thoughts, and maybe you can get to it as time permits and you can think about this. So, but first, the biggest issue is, what was that code again for LOL? Just LOL.
Laugh out loud or look it online. Look it on lending. Yep. That's good.
So the sidebar that we can have sometime, and I'd be curious to know more about the preparation of your market commentary, how that put together. Has your team done an analysis of the Chicago Commodity Index to determine a correlation to MBS price change volatility, and then how your team can supplement some of the hedge advisory work that the hedge advisors do in providing some guidance? Because it sounds like there's some parallel there. I just, like you started out saying, the depth isn't the same, but it's still very interesting. So we can bookmark those, come back to them if it works to put it into the discussion today. But I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts about, after the margin call, what else was going on in that time?
Yeah, you bet. And the margin call thing, I don't want to minimize it, right? Because I have clients on the site and long-term friends that have been with me for 10 plus years that were freaking out and losing their minds, and rightfully so. Yeah. I don't want to make it seem like that wasn't a big issue. I was just telling them at the time that, hey, guys, this will be leveling off now. This is going to calm down. And it's something that we were going to endure in one form or another just because bond yields were going to fall so quickly and prices were going to rise so quickly. It was going to be an issue. Yeah. The big intraday volatility, that's really on the Fed, I think. They had to choose between undershooting again and maybe causing more panic, or overshooting and causing stuff like these margin call issues. And I think they erred on the side of being too forceful, and that was probably the right decision, but not without consequence. But as far as the real issues, there's one more unreal issue, or one more sort of red herring issue to get out of the way before we get to the real one. And I'm not sure if you guys talked about this or not, but the CARES Act and the servicer backstop.
Oh, yes.
And so that was center stage for a while, where the initial draft of the CARES Act in the House had a servicer backstop to some extent. And what we're talking about here, for listeners that might not know, is that in the mortgage world, when a servicer is sending payments through to the investor, to the bondholder, depending on the type of loan and how that loan is originated, in many cases, they are on the hook to send the whole payment or a substantial portion of the payment, regardless of the borrower making their payment. And in an environment where you have this official piece of legislation saying, hey, guys, you don't have to make your payments, then we're looking at the biggest potential tidal wave of forbearances and non-payment that we've ever seen, even much greater than the financial crisis, and servicers being on the hook to forward those payments and maybe not having the cash flow to do so. That was a very valid concern, but we saw, as backstops were implemented in Ginnie Mae and as the forbearance situation has unfolded in conventional lending, that the servicing backstop was not the deal breaker either. It was a concern, but it wasn't the thing that had caused the sort of the centerpiece of benchmarking the drama for the mortgage market. And what I mean by that is this unimaginably wide gap between mortgage rates and what mortgage bonds said those rates should be. And I think, Dave, we did talk about this last week, maybe a little
we
bit.
We did. He was on the podcast on that last week, so he missed that dialogue we had on that. But you did touch on that. It was really good. I loved your comments on that.
Yeah. And I mean, the historical spread between the MBS current coupon, which is the theoretical yield that would be based on par, if par even existed right now, has been about 100 basis points to 110 basis points, 90 to 110. And it blew up all the way to 230 on April 1st. And if the servicing backstop and if the margin call issue, if those things were the linchpins, then we would have seen those spreads come in much more quickly. But instead, those things happened and spreads just sort of continued plotting slightly tighter, slightly lower. Even now, we're at 140 basis points, which is great, but it's very elevated historically still. And this is in line with what we were talking about on MBS Live, which is this isn't a process that fixes itself in a couple of days. This is all about coronavirus. It's not about these nuts and bolts issues for the mortgage industry. It is about this broad uncertainty. We need to not overcomplicate the issue. And I was more guilty of this than anybody with the servicing issue because I was really gung-ho on dissecting that stuff and talking about these backstops. But then when we saw that Ginnie Mae backstop come out, it didn't really do anything for Ginnie Mae loans. In fact, Ginnie Mae loans were doing worse than conventional loans. And so we had to ask ourselves, why is that? Well, guess what? If you're a Ginnie Mae borrower, no offense to you, I've been one in the past, your demographic is one that is at more risk of ending up in forbearance. And you, as a servicer, also are generally required to be more on the hook, your bondholders, than for conventional loans. So the Ginnies presented the biggest risk for their bondholders and for servicers and for originators. And so the margins were the widest. And the forbearance reports have proven that out, that they've had the biggest uptake in forbearances. And it's always been all about what the course of coronavirus and the forbearance situation was going to be. Because regardless of the backstop, mortgage servicers need to have a reasonable level of certainty as to payments that are going to come in. Lenders need to have a reasonable level of certainty that they're not going to get hit with things like 500 to 700 basis point hit for delivering a loan where the borrower happens to opt for the forbearance before they have a chance to sell it to the agencies. And when you have these sorts of unprecedented changes going into effect, and in some cases, retroactive extensions of early payoff time windows.
Right.
You have to account for that. And if you don't know what's going to happen based on this completely unprecedented disease situation, you have to pad your margins. You have to charge more.
Yep.
Because you might be on the hook for something and you don't even know what it is yet.
It's crazy time.
Yeah, it really is. And that's what I think, just that basic overarching, hey, it's coronavirus, dummy. It's not these narrowly focused, super specific, industry specific type things. It's the big picture. Is this going to get better, or is it going to get worse, or is it going to stay the same? So,
which really, we're getting some questions in. I got a couple questions coming in for our audience, but I want to ask one more question on that note. Is how bad is it? How do you quantify the fallout on the mortgage market? How do you quantify it?
Well, it's been a blessing and a curse because we have had to now ask ourselves questions about unexpected costs on crises. And to some extent, the fallout may look like a permanent adjustment to that gap between mortgage rates and mortgage-backed securities. As you were talking about with Alice earlier, there may be some fallout in terms of how credit reports have to be analyzed or changed.
Right.
Maybe some overlays are going to have to come into play with verifying cash flow for clients that have had a forbearance or that clients that have rental properties. The guidelines might change due to vacationing preferences for rental properties. A lot of things surrounding coronavirus in a sort of logical way. But from a nuts and bolts number standpoint, you really benchmark it with that spread between rates and MBS. The positive of it is that we've had three straight days with the average top tier, best of the best rate under 3% for the first time ever.
Yeah, let's get to some of the questions that are coming in here as we get close to wrapping this up. I want to respect some of our listeners who have texted me in some comments. I know you have a great relationship with Adam. Talk about that and all the various resources you pull from to put up on MBS Live, especially when it comes to the commentary. What are some of the resources?
Adam and I met very close to the start of all of this, and he's the guy who has a mind like a steel trap. And
amazing.
Definitely, he's my go-to guy. When I don't understand something or if I want the technical explanation, he's one of the first people I talked to. He used to work here, and he moved on and is now working at Thomson Reuters and is their head of mortgages and is building tremendous stuff over there for the higher level mortgage people. And it's always been sort of a dream of ours to increase the level of integration between the front lines of the mortgage market and secondary, because you get a lot of the sentiment of like, oh, my lock desk is screwing me over. And I think when originators don't understand how secondary does their thing, it engenders some animosity. And that's true not only in lending, but in all areas of life. When you don't understand why somebody who has a position of power over you to some extent does what they do, you might think it's for some negative reason. But in this day and age, especially post-financial crisis, it's never made more sense for a secondary marketing manager or a company owner to have the best interest of their loan officers in mind. And I think for the good secondary folks out there, they're probably tired of being maligned as evil cost raisers for their loan officers. Adam and I always wanted to sort of bridge that gap between the primary and the secondary market. And
you guys have done it. You've done it. It looks like you have done it. I mean, I just love what it is. And talk real quickly about the live news stream. That's one of the windows that's within the window that I love, the little section there. And then I want to talk about the MBS live chat. So first of all, the news stream. You're pulling in some of the greatest news clips. You're aggregating and putting it all right here. But that's amazing how you do that and how quickly and how easy it is.
Yeah, so we have a content partnership with CNBC, and every news station, people have different opinions of it. But Diana Olick does a great job of staying neutral and trying to cover what's true in the housing market. And we like working with CNBC because they have such a wide reach and they put out videos that we can pull into the news stream. And from there, we just have a proprietary algorithm that cruises the news and finds stuff that might be interesting. And we combine that with the analysis and the updates and alerts I write, which I'm going to have to write one here in a second right now because the market's going down a little bit.
Yeah, I see that. We need to get you freed up so you could go write that. But I mean, like, I'm noticing, like, also in Calculated Risk, one of my favorite blogs, it gives great commentary on that. CNBC, all that. And you could click on any one of these. Reuters is in here. Calculated Risk again. I mean, Redfin, there's just some great content. But talk also about the live chat, because I think this is one of those features that a loan officer can benefit from. You can ask the questions, pose it right to the audience, and get immediate feedback. There's stuff going on right now that's really effective. Talk about it.
Yeah, if you're watching right now, then I'm going to have to publish this alert real quick, which I was typing while you were talking. So that'll come out right now. And we got a question about the Licking on Lending segment. So I'm going to have to pull up this link and going to have to paste that in. Oh, it looks like you already took care of that for me. You have thousands of originators around the country. If they type into this white box and hit enter, everyone else is going to see it. And
everyone's responding.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry, I'm so excited about this section because there's actually three tabs at the top. So it's not just the main section on topic, but there's lenders and rates and then off topic. But I mean, so talk about those three tabs. But I look at how this is working for people that are out there, loan officers, and immediate response. And it's our community, and it's such an effective tool.
And just real quick on that, what I was going to say is that what we found very early on, very heartwarming, and it was a beautiful thing to watch. You have LOs that wouldn't necessarily help each other otherwise. They wouldn't even know each other. Now going out of their way to help somebody that's not even at their company. And for many of our people, they've said the same thing in different words over the years, which is, this just expanded the walls of my office to be like 3,000 miles wide.
Talk about the lenders and rates tab real quickly and then off topic. And we got to wrap this because you got to write some stuff. This market's acting up here. So talk about the second tab real quickly.
Yeah. So these are just ways that we divide chat out to try to keep it more focused. On topic chat is, you know, for market movement. Lenders and rates, if somebody wants to discuss something that's going on at a particular lender or an overlay or how that lender's rates are doing or a loan scenario, that would be that. And then off topic, before coronavirus, it was much more to do with sports, but now we got sourdough bread baking, parenting, how do we teach our kids Common Core math, stuff like that.
That's amazing. It's a great content. I love your website. It's such an honor to get to know you. And I'm just really thrilled that you're here. And I want to have your thought leadership present each week. And that, as well as obviously we want to create greater awareness of MBS Live. It's a powerful tool, listeners. So again, the website is mbslive.net. And then
the code LOL, Licking on Lending, LOL.
Look at the lending. I love it. Very good. Appreciate you so much for being here this week. I know you got to go back and make some comments, and great tool that you have. And we're, again, just honored to have you be here on the podcast. There's a lot more talk we could talk about, but we'll be doing that throughout the weeks ahead. Appreciate it so much.
Glad to be here. Thank you, Dave.
You bet. Next week, we're going to have Tim Ross, CEO of Ross Mortgage, joining us. It's a Father's Day special. He's going to have his dad on, Huey Ross, who I've known forever and ever. Tim's such a good friend, one of the leaders in the industry, definitely one of the leaders up in the Michigan market. And so I got to know Tim a number of years ago. I'm so excited to have him on, and we honor him. And we've honored different fathers that are in the mortgage industry. Check out the previous Father's Day podcast. That's so great. The George family, the Georges on here. Oh, was it last year? And then we also had Mitch Kiter and My Three Sons on. That was another one we did, I think, in 2016. Anyway, lots of good stuff. We're going to look forward to add Tim Ross and Hugh Ross, father-son team, and having discussing that next week. Again, special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, Indicom, Accelerate, Ainsworth Advisors, Mobility, Modex, and so many more. And, of course, MBS Live. Go get your free extended offer there to get the chance to peruse through that and by putting in LOL, the Lookin' on Lenny podcast. So good to have you all with us. Have a great week, everybody. See you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.